I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome back to Radio Times. Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday because it's about family and food and tradition, and also how new ideas about cuisine are changing those traditions. The rich diversity of this country is making the meal more than just turkey and stuffing, sweet potato, cranberry sauce, and pumpkin pie, although there is something nostalgic, at least for me, about those reliable staples. Our guests are award-winning chefs who bring some innovative ideas to the Thanksgiving feast, and let me introduce them to you. Guillermo Pernot is a 2-time James Beard award-winning chef and partner at Cuba Libre and Rum Bar. He has traveled to Cuba, meeting and cooking with Cuban chefs. He helped to introduce Nuevo Latino cuisine to our city, wrote a cookbook back in 2001 called Ceviche, the best single subject cookbook. And Guillermo Pernot, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Also with us is Andrew Wood, owner and chef at Russet, where he works with his wife, pastry chef Kristen Wood. He's also co-owner and chef at the restaurant at Wybrook Farm in Honeybrook, Pennsylvania. He has a particular interest and focus on locally sourced ingredients. Andrew Wood, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks.
You're very welcome. And I have to say, when September rolls around, I think, okay, I'm going to do something different for Thanksgiving. I'm going to, you know, fire up my grill and do something different. And of course, I never do because I never think I could practice a big meal like this before the actual big meal actually happens. Do you think there's something about tradition that sort of ties us to this traditional Thanksgiving meal, Guillermo?
There is something that
I always have big plans, and then I just go back to my regular.
Well, I'm this year I'm breaking all the rules. Yes, there are traditions, and because I'm breaking the rules, I also feel a little bit guilty. So I'm going to do something that is a little bit traditional. This year I decided to break all the rules and decided to roast the whole hog in a caja china. First of all, the weather is perfect for this.
So you can do it outside, right?
We're going to do it outside, yes, of course. This will take about 6 to 7 hours to do. It's a fixed 60-pound hog that is going to feed hopefully 25, 30 people, more likely. But I felt guilty, so I said, why just that? So I wanted to go back to some traditional things. So I do going to roast also a breast of turkey. Again, I'm going to use the coals. I'm going to make sort of like a porchetta, but with turkey, with a turkey breast. So I wanted to use the turkey one way or another. Just because of out of guilt only.
Well, I'm thinking of also guilt, also that if I experiment too off the grid in my family, there will be a revolt at the table.
Yeah, I think the big thing too is it's not just the cooking; it's all about your family too. You know, and I think people tend to do the same meal a lot of times just because there's so much on their plate when it comes to this holiday. You know, people start cooking it 3-4 days ahead of time, and you know they get their routine down. And I know my mom certainly has her specific routine down, and she hits all her exact numbers, and that's
how
she does it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's delicious.
So, what are you cooking for Thanksgiving, Andrew?
Well, we're actually headed to my in-laws in Ohio, and I'm kind of manning up the turkey, and I'm actually not sure. It's kind of like a chef's basket when I get out there. So we're leaving today, and then I'll see what we have on hand and just start cooking it up. It'll probably be relatively traditional. I'm sure we'll have sweet potatoes and Brussels sprouts and all the like.
Nothing wrong with that. Now, I do want to talk turkey. How are you going to cook your turkey? And then I'll go back to you, Guillermo.
Yeah. Well, we're actually my wife, Kristen, her grandmother has a really special method. She gets a really big turkey. And
how
she,
big?
Well, we have, I think, 24 people, so I think it's probably a 25-pounder. But she'll cook it all ahead of time, all the way. And she cooks it kind of the reverse of what you're expecting because she's not looking for the crispy skin. She's not looking for a roast that you're going to present necessarily so much as a perfectly cooked, juicy turkey breast. So she cooks it upside down in a bag. In her oven.
I heard that before, yeah. Yes.
And it's glorious. You know, she cooks it upside down in the bag, usually a day ahead or 2 days ahead, and then, you know, lets it cool all the way down in all of its juices so it soaks up all of the all of the sauce that comes out of it, and then we break it down and carve it and reheat it in that sauce, and it really is something special.
Plus, it takes all the anxiety of is it done?
Yeah, exactly.
And it opens, frees up your oven. That's very important.
And, right? Yeah, I've had her turkey now, I think, 5 times because we do it every other year, but she is always moist.
Wow. There are always some sort of basic questions I asked on the show the day before Thanksgiving. One is brining or not brining. Do you have a position on that, Guillermo?
I like brining, but because I love salt. So I think the turkey needs a lot of the seasoning inside. Although I think if you make a gravy that is spicy I don't mean spicy by heat, but with a lot of spices,
right,
that will help you get over the tasteless breast, let's call it. Although, again, breast is great for the next day to make sandwiches, right? Or that night.
What's your position on brining, Andrew?
You know, brining is a tricky thing because it chemically changes the texture of the breast. You know, it will soften it up considerably. You know, so, you know, I've found that even though it makes it kind of fail safe, it's not going to dry out, it gives it almost like a mushy texture.
I'm not so much
on the brine. You know, it all depends on your end result too, or it all depends on the size of the turkey. You know, a really, really big turkey, it's going to take a long time for those legs to cook. So brining might be an advantage because it's going to make sure that the breast is still moist when the legs are dry or when the legs are done. But for me personally, the salt is definitely key. I agree with you there because you have to get your seasoning to really penetrate. But it also, it somewhat takes away from the turkey texture, you know.
Let me just give out the phone number because we always get flooded with calls and questions and comments when we do shows about how to cook for Thanksgiving. And again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And we are talking with two Philadelphia chefs, Guillermo Pernot and Andrew Wood, about what to cook for Thanksgiving. Guillermo, I was reading about something called spatchcocking.
Right.
I never heard of that until yesterday. What is that?
It's basically you split the bird from the back. You remove the backbone, so you split it in a certain way that it lays flat on the grill, let's say.
Grilling.
I do that a lot in grilling with chickens. And I just leave it on it, and I put maybe a brick on top of it. On top of the bird, so it lays flat and it cooks evenly, and I don't have to worry about that chicken being raw or overcooked or anything like that. And I love that crispiness that the grill brings. You can do the same thing with the turkey if you have a grill big enough.
Right.
On the grill. I've never done a spatchcocking on an oven because I always make it on the grill.
And you can spread it out on the grill.
That's right. And you can put two birds, and they cook so evenly. And and it's so idiot-proof, if I can say that.
I like that.
Yeah, well, again, we, as chefs, sometimes we don't want to worry too much about and the simple things sometimes don't work for us.
That's the truth.
You know? So we want to make sure that we just, like, do it the right way, the simple way.
I mean, should we think of a turkey as just a big chicken and not get all crazy about it?
That's basically it.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to that. You know, the spatchcocking is especially good for the heritage breed birds. You know, if you're going to get a locally farmed bird or an old breed of bird, the breasts are usually a lot smaller than you would expect
on a
butterball. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have larger legs because they walk around and they're free range and, you know, they're more muscular. So by spatchcocking and kind of laying it out even, you have a much better chance, even in the oven, of having your legs be done and your breasts not dry out. You know, usually the heritage breeds are a little bit leaner, you know, a lot less fatty. So it's good to kind of speed anything you can do to accelerate the cooking of the legs so it doesn't take away from the breast is a good idea.
I was reading about heritage turkeys and I came across the word barding. Oh, what's barding?
Barding is cool. You know, it's something that they don't do as much as they used to. But what they'll do is they'll actually wrap it in pork fat.
Oh.
Well, there's two variations. There's one where they take big pieces of fat back from pigs, and they slice it thin, and they wrap it all the way around the breast and completely cover it. The idea that the pork fat will baste it as it goes. Then there's another way where they lard it, where they actually take strips of pork fat and basically inject it into the breasts so it bastes from the inside out.
Wow.
I know a lot of people do that with bacon.
They do that with needles too. So,
hypodermic needles?
No, with trussing needles.
Interesting.
So you can lard it that way. So you cut the pork fat thin enough, you put it through the needle, and then you truss it, and that's the way to do it. An easier way for somebody at home would be to get a cheesecloth and soak it in melted butter.
Oh.
And then wrap the breast or the turkey with that, with a cloth, and then roast it that way. That would be much easier instead of getting the fat and everything else.
Let me ask you another question about basting. I mean, are you a big baster? Don't worry about it?
Don't open the oven.
Okay.
The more you open the oven, the longer that it's going to take, the more you're going to drink, the longer and the more anxiety is going to come through.
Waiting for the bird to cook, right?
Just wait, let it cook. Buy it a Bluetooth thermometer, plug it in, walk 100 yards, walk around your house. Mm-hmm. The phone will tell you where the turkey is at.
I got to agree with you there. You know, it's this over-checking ends up being people's downfall, you know, and it's something I see at the restaurant a lot too. You know, like you see a line cook and he's got his saute pan and he just wants to shake it and shake it and shake it. Just let the stuff cook, let it be.
And truly, I mean, obviously opening the door every half hour, so you're letting out a lot of heat, adding to the
You drop the time 50 degrees for every 3 seconds that door is open.
50 degrees.
Mm-hmm. At least, yeah.
So leave it closed.
You know, and a commercial oven is twice as insulated, or it will lose heat a lot less than a home oven.
Right.
So it
can recuperate faster.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation, talking turkey and all sorts of things with our guests, Guillermo Pernot and Andrew Wood. And this is a Radio Times tradition, the day before Thanksgiving, inviting local chefs on Radio Times to share some of their cooking advice, some of the recipes that they have enjoyed at this time of year. You can give us a call. I see calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Ask questions, share some family traditions as well. And again, Guillermo Pernot, he is the chef partner at Cuba Libre and Rum Bar. Our guest, Andrew Wood, is owner and chef at Russet, also co-owner and chef at the restaurant at Wybrook Farm in Honeybrook, PA. Stay with us. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Andrew Wood and Guillermo Pernot about what to cook tomorrow for Thanksgiving. And before we get back to our conversation, and we got a lot of callers and comments here as well, let me just play a clip from Frim Fram Sauce. This is a Nat King Cole from 1945, just to get us in the mood.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the Frim Fram sauce with the awesome fee, with Shafafa on the side. I don't want pork chops and bacon that won't awaken my appetite inside. I want the Frim Fram sauce with the awesome fee, with Shafafa on the side. A fella really got to eat, and a fella should eat right.
Five will get you 10. I'm gonna feed myself right tonight. I don't want fish cakes and rye bread. You heard what I said. Waiter, please serve mine fried. I want the frim fram sauce with the awesome faith, with shafafa on the side.
Little Nat Cole to get us in the mood for Thanksgiving. Let me read an email from Nicole. She says, here's a chance to help out someone in real time. I was making a traditional pumpkin pie. I didn't notice that the filling recipe was for two pies. I have only one crust and one pie plate. I'm left with a filling for a second pie. Any ideas of how I can use this yumminess? Can I save it until the weekend when the pie plate is free again? Any creative ideas about what I can do with it? So she's got pie filling, but no pie crust to put it in. What, mm-hmm. Any ideas, Andrew?
I mean, you certainly could freeze it. Another thing you could do is look up on the internet a recipe for a crostata. It would be kind of a pie crust that's a lot sturdier, and you could, you know, mold up the sides and kind of freeform bake it.
Huh?
You'd probably use about half as much pumpkin filling as you would for a traditional pie, because if you have too much in there, it's just going to spill over. But, I'm sure you could find a good recipe that it calls for you to roll up, make a little crust on your own, and it's almost like a pizza.
Oh, but interesting.
With the pumpkin pie filling.
Guillermo, any ideas from you?
I will line it up with a little heavy cream and make it into a pudding and serve it in a demi-tasse sort of vessel and poach it in water. I mean, not poach it, but you know, baked it in a bed of water.
Oh, that sounds good.
And then serve it with whipped cream the same way as you will do it, but line it up. It's too a little bit too heavy for that.
Let me ask just a stuffing question, then we'll get back to we'll get to some of our callers here. When I was a kid growing up in the 50s, you know, my mom would stuff the stuffing inside the turkey and let it all cook. Now we're saying, uh-oh, things like salmonella or things don't cook right. Mm-hmm. Do you have, I'm looking at you, Andy, do you have any fast, hard rules about stuffing inside or outside the bread?
I never stuff inside.
You never
honestly.
Do?
Honestly. I think that having a little airflow in the cavity, especially on a larger bird, is going to make it cook more evenly. I still trust the chicken or trust the turkey somewhat traditionally. But I never put the stuffing inside.
You put herbs and things like that in there?
Yeah, maybe. Something that's going to be aromatic, something that's going to cook quickly. But, you know, if you put this really dense mass, then you're not cooking to the center of the bird to be done. You're cooking to the center of the stuffing to be done. So then it changes the whole method.
Well, you're definitely going to overcook the breast.
Right.
No
for sure.
Question about it. And all the blood just going inside of that, just I don't find it to be very appealing. Right. In the Latin culture, they don't use bread stuffing. They use what is called congri, which is pilaf or rice and beans with pork fat and pork. And sometimes they do the stuffing with that. Well, they do a little bit for flavor, but then they do the congri aside and then they serve it on the side. But I'd rather not.
Yeah.
I'm not happy. I'm not a happy person when I see it.
I got you.
It's kind of an old tradition too. You know, it's about extending the meat that you have for as long as you can.
Right.
You know, it's pretending that the stuffing is just part of your roast so that you're full, but you're not eating all the meat because meat is a lot less precious than it was, you know, even 50 years ago.
That's true.
And it doesn't have that much flavor, actually.
No. If you cook it inside, I agree. You know, usually when I do it, I'll take all the giblets and necks and sometimes even the wings, and I'll make a really dark brown gravy, and I'll use some of that in a stuffing. I'll make the bread, but it's almost more like a bread pudding, a savory bread pudding, than what people see as stuffing.
No, I mean, there's so many things you can do to stuffing or to make stuffing.
Oh, my God. There is stuffings with oysters. There is stuffing with masa harina. It's a tamal. So the same way in Central America they use the tamal, the masa harina, and they put lard and all that, onions, peppers, and celery, and then they make the dough, and then they stuff the turkey with that. And so it's a big the tamal stuffed turkey. But there are a lot of different side dishes that you can serve stuffing, especially.
Well, let me get to some of our callers here. We've got Jeff from Vineland, New Jersey, joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead. You're on the air. Do we have Jeff? Nope. He says, on cooking a turkey on a Weber grill with charcoal, is leaving the turkey to cool better for the turkey so that it doesn't dry out?
I'm not sure. Question.
I'm not sure. Maybe leaving it on the – once it's cooked, leaving it on the grill?
To rest? Probably not. I mean, it depends. There's so many factors there with your fire. You know, if you're cooking it indirectly where your charcoals are not directly underneath the bird, you know, and with the lid on, you know, you have to really be careful. You know, I think if it's over 160 degrees Fahrenheit in there, even during the resting time, it's still cooking and could very easily overcook.
Yeah, it will go up 5 degrees after you remove it. No question about it.
Yeah.
Through the resting period, which is 15, 20 minutes, it will go up 5 to 7, 8, or 8 degrees sometimes. So take it at 160, you get it to 165 while it rests. Don't take it at 165 because then you go to 170, 170 something.
Let me see what Stephanie from New Jersey has to say. And Stephanie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thank you. I have decided to go outside tradition, and I want to make a duck this year. So I was wondering if you guys had any suggestions.
Guillermo, can I start with you?
Duck is very tricky because, first of all, they are small. So maybe unless you have four people, well, how much?
Three
people, that's all you can feed, right? So you have several ducks. Mm-hmm. Is that what you plan to do, have three or four ducks? All right, so.
No, I just have one duck. It's about 7 or 8 pounds. But because we have so many sides, everyone only eats a couple ounces of meat anyways.
Yeah, but duck is different. Duck is very flavorful. So you may eat more than you think they're going to eat. Just make sure that you cook it slow. And then when it reaches the temperature, just finish it up at a higher temperature to crisp it up. Another option is a rotisserie will be great for duck, but
duck is really fatty, though, isn't it?
Very much.
Yeah, that's probably going to be your obstacle, or it is frequently an obstacle when you're cooking duck. Say if you have an 8-pounder, which is pretty big for a duck, I'm guessing it's probably a Muscovy.
A Muscovy duck, yeah. Or Boulard, yeah.
So they're some of them are really lean and some of them are really fat. There's a lot of variation. But when you're cooking it, you wouldn't want to cook it necessarily as long as you would cook a turkey because the breast at a medium temperature is going to eat a lot better than all the way to well done. But then it's a little bit dicey too because, depending on the amount of fat on the outside, it could be tricky. A lot of times, too, like if you'll cook it to where the breast is at a medium temperature, let's say 135 degrees, the legs won't be done. But if you take it out and you cut the legs off and then put the legs back in the oven and really let them crisp up because they almost can't overcook, you'd want to take them to 160 for sure. Otherwise, they could be really chewy.
And an 8-pound duck, how many people do you think that feeds?
Four, maybe.
Mm. Oh, four. All right.
Yes, six would probably be the outside. Well, you know, but where I'm a big meat eater, and
yeah. So you might maybe four is better, right? Stephanie, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Paula from Wilmington, Delaware, has to say. Paula, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Several years ago, I found a recipe for cooking. It's the turkey breast over the stuffing in the oven at a 425-degree oven, and it was the first time I ever made turkey where it didn't dry out. It's delicious. So I made it a couple times with chicken, and this year I bought a whole turkey breast, whole turkey, not realizing that the recipe called for just the breast. So I was thinking about taking the legs and thigh off and putting that in earlier. It's cooked in a 425-degree oven. And then putting the breast in. So I was wondering, how much sooner or how much longer do you think I need to have the legs in there? Or do I even?
And you're talking, Paula, about the breast on top of the stuffing? Is that what you're saying?
She wants to cook it in two different stages.
You make a pile of the stuffing, and you just put the breast on top like the breast of the tent?
Well, you kind of grimaced when she said that, Guillermo.
Well, yeah.
It's delicious.
Yeah. again, that bleeding of the raw meat on top of stuffing doesn't appeal to me very much. Now, I would take the breast and the thighs. The leg and the thighs apart. I will start them first. When they reach 110 degrees, maybe introduce the breast into the equation.
Oh, interesting.
And there are some recipes that they break the turkey in two different options to cook. I mean, the legs first and the thighs and then the breast. So there are ways of doing that. I just don't know from the top of my head. I think it's 110 and then the breast. Again, all depends on how big is the turkey is.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Big turkeys, all the questions just go right out the door.
Yeah, Andrew,
there's
go ahead.
There's a lot of feel to it. Roasting meat is something that the more you do it, the better you get at it, or the better you get at thinking about it. But I think, though, that sounds like a Julia Child recipe to me. I think I've read that. I've read that recipe in the past. Or some kind of variation on that. I'd say that's probably about right to cook the legs to 110 first. I don't know how you have them laid out on top of the stuffing, though. That could be a factor. Because wherever you're going to put the breast, you know, is presumably uncovered, and it could be a little tricky. I don't think it would be a bad idea just to cook the legs entirely separate if you wanted to go that route, in a different pan or even
Oven.
Paula, how
many ovens does you have?
I'm hearing from both of our guests maybe rethink this idea, but it's your meal, so you can obviously do what you want.
Yes, there are so many options that we sometimes make decisions on the fly.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we do.
Let me just quickly...
trust your gut, though.
Yeah,
trust
absolutely.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Guillermo Pernot and Andrew Wood, our guests in this hour of Radio Times, at traditional Radio Times, to invite local chefs to join us on the air, to take questions, to share some of their ideas about what to cook tomorrow. Guillermo Pernot is chef partner at Cuba Libre and Rum Bar, and Andrew Wood is owner and chef at Russet. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me read an email from Blair. She says, my husband is Iranian, hates turkey, so every Thanksgiving for the past 6 or 7 years, I've taken the opportunity to cook Persian food. It takes all day long. It's really complicated, but it saves time at the grocery store, because while everyone else is after the yams and turkey, I'm over in the herb section trying to buy ingredients for the national dish of Iran, which I can't pronounce, which is a stew made out of tons of different herbs, kidney beans, lamb, and served over Iranian rice. It's delicious every time, and everyone appreciates the exoticism. I mean, that sounds delicious.
It does.
Yeah.
And this also really speaks to, I mean, I think sort of the wonderful thing about Thanksgiving is, yes, we have these traditional foods, but there's so many ways to do it differently.
Oh, for sure. And kind of always it's been that way. The whole idea of Thanksgiving comes from the Puritans, and they, it started in England in the 1500s as a reaction to the Reformation. You know, they wanted to get rid of all Catholic feast days, so they created these days of fasting and these days of Thanksgiving. You know, usually the Thanksgiving days were really about when something good happened to you,
right.
you would say thanks and you would have a feast, and if something bad was happening to you, you would have a fast. So, you know, it was kind of an adaptation of the feast days. And then it really took hold when they came over on the Mayflower, because about half of the people died in the first year. And then, you know, the people that survived, that learned how to eat and raise corn, they were really, really thankful. So that's kind of where our particular framework comes from. But
we always get asked questions, Guillermo, about what you do about the vegans, the vegetarians, the gluten-free people. I mean, this is the world we live in as well.
That's correct. Nobody in my house or in wherever we cook the turkey is allowed to come in if they don't eat turkey or anything like that. No, that's not true. I think that there is plenty of vegetables and side dishes. This year we are doing the turkey and the pig, but we also, one of our neighbors, one of the childs is a vegan, so We have his father made a tofu general style sauce, and crudités, and some potatoes, and roasted potatoes, and stuff like that. So, and he will be happy eating that. It is complicated, but I think doesn't have to be. I will never say buy a tofu turkey.
No,
don't do that. There are plenty techniques of how to make vegetables so much more appealing than just boiling them, or, you know, that anybody would be satisfied with that.
Plus, there's so many cool grains and things now you can
play absolutely
with.
Yeah. And it's always beans.
And beans.
I mean, the Cubans eat black beans, and we are not going to have it this year, but black beans is always a part of black beans is always great to have.
You got a thumbs up from Emily Bryant, our producer here, when you said black beans in Cuba.
Her stepfather is Cuban, or?
Family certainly has Cuban roots.
She was making, they were making croquettes for the last 4 days.
And now she's waving her hands in the air.
Now, that's what you're going to do with the turkey carcasses. Turkey croquettes at the end. So I'm sure we're going to talk about leftovers later.
We absolutely will. Let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about what to cook for Thanksgiving. And again, our guests are Andrew Wood, owner and chef at Russet. He actually works with his wife, a pastry chef, Kristen Wood, and he's the co-owner and chef at the restaurant at Wybrook Farm in Honeybrook, Pennsylvania. He has a particular interest and focus on locally sourced ingredients. We haven't really talked about that, and I do want to pick up on that. Guillermo Pernot is a 2-time James Beard award-winning chef, partner at Cuba Libre and Rum Bar. He helped to introduce Nuevo Latino cuisine to our city, and he travels to Cuba and actually cooks with Cuban chefs as well. 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking turkey and all sorts of foods and sides with our guests Andrew Wood and Guillermo Pernot. And before we get back to our callers and our guests, here's Be Thankful for What You Got, written and performed by William Devon from 1974.
Though you may not drive a great big Cadillac, against the white walls, TV antennas in the back, you may not have a car. Brothers and sisters, you can still stand tall. Just be thankful for what you've got. Though you may not drive a great big Cadillac, diamond in the back, sunroof top, digging the scene with a gangster lead. The white walls, TV antennas in the back.
Thankful for What You Got, written and performed by William Devon back in 1974. Donnie, I think I can read that right, or Donnie calling us from South Philadelphia. Go ahead. Hi, you're on Radio Times.
Hi, Donnie. But, so I am baking all not vegan, but all non-dairy this Thanksgiving, and I'm trying this new recipe for an apple spice pie from Martha Stewart, and in the cooking down of the filling, it calls for heavy cream. So I'm just asking, what's a good non-dairy substitute for heavy cream? I have heard coconut cream, but I'm kind of a little confused on what to do.
Is there a non-dairy substitute for heavy cream, Guillermo,
that you know of? Not that I know.
Some
soy milk, but no heavy cream.
Yeah, heavy cream, even if you use the coconut cream, it's not exactly going to behave the same way, just because the heavy cream, especially if it's homogenized and is going to stay emulsified. And as you cook it, because of the high fat content, it's going to stay emulsified. I think you could try it with coconut milk or like Coco Lopez, which probably, I think has some stabilizers
yeah,
in it. But
it will be too sweet.
But if you reduce it a lot, there's a very good chance it'll break.
Oh.
And you'll have like a fat scheme.
Break meaning sort of break apart?
If that break, like the fat's going to break out of the coconut milk. And
right.
You'll have like a sheen of coconut oil and everything. Heavy cream is a really tough one to try to get around.
So this is a pie?
Is this a pie, Donnie?
Yeah, it is. It's an apple pie. It's a Martha Stewart recipe that I found. Yeah, it's a spiced apple pie, and then the cooking down of the apples, it just, for some reason, it calls it heavy cream. I've never heard of that, but I thought I'd try it, but maybe I should consider a different apple pie recipe.
My wife does one like a sour cream apple pie with streusel on top. It is relatively common, you know, especially as you get to more like German pies. But I think if you tried
just sneaking in and not say anything.
Well, you
I don't
do
know.
That too.
Yeah, but they don't.
If that's
you don't know the
kosher
heart,
or not. a question from Susan: do they have suggestions for roasting veggies for 20 people? Guillermo.
Oh my God! Yeah, I mean, vegetables are fantastic. Just make sure they are cut the same size and they are the same texture. Meaning, you put a celery and a parsnip and a carrot together. Try not or a radish. Those the density of the vegetables is very important because they're going to cook at different times. And try to separate them. If you do a Brussels sprouts, maybe with a radish, it's a good combination.
Oh.
And the carrot to be the same size as those vegetables and so on. And potatoes, they cook a little bit faster, maybe put them towards the end. You know, it's all about size and textures of the vegetables.
Sure.
And definitely olive oil, salt, and fresh herbs. Whole bouquets of sage, rosemary and thyme, and then you can pull them out so you don't see them on your vegetables. I'm very high temperatures, 450,
oh, wow.
500 degrees in a home oven, 400 with a convex, if you have a convex option in the oven. And don't open the oven so often, toss it a couple of times. Also, very important, roasting pan. Make sure your roasting pan is hot before you put your vegetables.
It's hot even before. Oh.
That's right. Otherwise, the vegetables are going to stick to it.
Oh.
And so you want it to cook evenly and so on.
Let me ask you, Andrew, about because I know you're interested in locally
yes.
sourced food, and we had mentioned heritage turkeys. Are there other veggies and things locally that we should think about?
Oh, for sure. A good reason. There's a ton of reasons to eat locally, but the best one is freshness. You know. For the most part, if you get something that's local, it hasn't been shipped across the country and it hasn't experienced a lot of refrigeration. And in that time frame, it's pretty much going to taste more like itself than otherwise. There's a variety of celery that we're getting right now that I really like. And celery is kind of an underrated vegetable. If you look in old cookbooks, there's lots of celery soups and stewed celery and celery as a standalone vegetable. But there's a variety called Pen Crisp. I'm pretty sure they have it at the Fair Food stand at the Reading Terminal Market.
Oh.
That it can be a little woody, but it braises really, really nicely. And it just is full of flavor if you like that kind of parsley freshness, and it's crisp, and it just really brings a lot.
And it grows specifically in Pennsylvania?
Well, they developed it in Pennsylvania. It's an old variety. I think it's from the 1700s. And then, you know, Seed Savers have kind of picked around it. It's going to be really green. It's not going to be that kind of like pale green that you would expect from like a blanched type of celery.
And this type of celery also, just always remember to peel your celery.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
A lot of people don't peel your celery.
I don't peel my celery.
Oh, you have to. Take all those fibers at the outside that they become, you know, uncomfortable to eat.
How about chestnuts? I know that's something else. Mm. And I wanted, since we're talking Thanksgiving, we'll get back to our callers.
Chestnuts are a big deal because, basically all of the American chestnuts were destroyed by blight. There was two blights, one at about the turn of the century and the second one in the 50s. You know, there are a few stands of American, of real American chestnuts, but mostly they're gone. And it was just a mainstay of our culture. You know, it's, they were easier to get for flour, and people, and they were abundant. But because of these blights, most of the chestnuts were replaced with Asian rootstock, which is why you see chestnuts now at, in October and November. The American chestnut actually doesn't drop fruit until well into December, which is why you have that song, Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire for Christmas,
oh.
Because the American chestnut takes a lot longer to become ripe. Chestnuts, I love them. And for me personally, I dry roast them. I'll score them with an X. I'll just throw them right in the oven, maybe 400 degrees, and they'll start the outer shells will start to pop off, and you want to peel them while they're still hot, but cool enough to handle, and you'll be able to get the outsides off. And then usually you'll have to cook them again because you know it'll be hot enough to get to peel them, but not necessarily hot enough to toast them all the way through.
And good for stuffing.
Oh yes, very good for stuffing. A lot of times I'll make soup with chestnuts. I think is good, especially at Thanksgiving. And sometimes I put it in the gravy. I use it to thicken the gravy.
Oh, interesting. Let me get Stuart from Atlanta, Georgia, to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Stuart. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So my question is about a leg of lamb. I wanted to put something different on the table. So I butterflied it, and I've got it marinated, and it's all tied up. And I was going to sous vide it, but the internet's kind of all over the place in terms of temperatures and time. And I was wondering if you guys had some thoughts on that.
Well, Stuart, let me toss that to Guillermo Pernot.
Sous vide, I hope you have a good machine, because to keep the temperature a consistent, more likely 160 degrees to sous vide is going to be very difficult in a big piece of meat.
That's true.
And
it's relevant. You know, because it's such a big piece of meat, how much water you have is going
to
be relevant as well.
And you have to move that all that water, and so the machine has to be really a good machine. Otherwise, you are destined for failure.
Oh,
that's
dear.
No question about it.
I mean, this sounds complicated.
Well, yeah. Sous vide, just for people who don't know about it, more or less, it's a really, really, really slow method of cooking. And what they do is you take a meat or a vegetable and you seal it airtight in a bag, and then you immerse that bag in water. The idea being that through the slow cooking and being in a sealed environment, it doesn't lose any of its aroma. You know, nothing dissipates into the air, and everything that comes out of whatever you happen to be cooking stays with it. It is a very good method, but it's very time consuming.
Wow.
And for me, it doesn't have a lot of browning.
Yeah, it may take overnight also to do
dear.
It. Yeah. Now, what I will do if you definitely want to use a sous vide option is start it that way, chill it. It will be raw inside, and then sear it and finish it in a very hot oven, and then you get both benefits of the searing of the font of the meat and then the juiciness of the sous vide. So I will make a combination of two.
I'd say at least 10 hours, 140 to 160.
Well, yes. Stuart, good luck with that.
Good luck with that.
I'm glad you called in. Just a comment from Bob. He said, I had to tie my mom down to the kitchen chair to listen to these guys. She's been making a turkey with stuffing inside of it since we were kids, and she has it down to a science. And she has made oyster sauce. They need to branch out.
Good
little
for her.
Smiley face for you.
Good for her. Don't change
whatever.
The tradition.
I like the oyster sauce.
Yeah,
I do too. Yeah. If it works for her,
More power to her. Let me see what Diane from Center City, Philadelphia has to say. Diane, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I just wanted to share my traditional vegan entree. And I take a traditional chestnut stuffing and I stuff a pumpkin. Big enough to make an attractive centerpiece. And everybody loves it. And that's kind of what I do. Either I make it with a bread filling, or sometimes I'll do a wild rice filling.
I think that's a really lovely option.
I always incorporate the chestnuts. And a little thing that I do with the chestnuts, when I roast them, I score them, and I put them in the oven in a shallow pan with a little bit of water, and I cook them at 425 for about 20 minutes. And that seems to make them moist and plump, and then I cut them up and put them in with my filling.
Absolutely. That
sounds
great.
Before I stuff the pumpkin.
Diana, thanks for calling in the Radio
Interesting.
Time. Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Let me see how many colors I can squeeze on before we have to say goodbye. This is Eric from Norristown. Eric, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about brisket. I'm cooking a brisket this year, and it was suggested to me by a few people to cook it, basically cook it tonight and then slice it up after refrigerating it and reheat it tomorrow. And I'm not sure if that is recommended or even makes a difference.
It does.
Andrew?
If you cook it tonight and refrigerate it, presumably you're cooking it in some kind of sauce. It's going to soak up a lot of that sauce and end up being moister. You know, like the meat will expel its juice and then it'll re-soak it back up.
Right.
You don't have to do it that way, though. You know, it depends on
your
result.
You can do it tomorrow
result.
If you want. Guillermo, yeah. Your thoughts?
Well, are you going to cook it on a sauce or are you going to put it on the grill?
Yeah, we're doing it on a brown sugar mustard sauce.
Okay. Yeah, I will do the same. I will definitely follow that suggestion. But, yeah, it's also all the juices definitely come back inside. And then tomorrow I will slice it cold and reheat it, slice already. Otherwise, it's going to fall apart on you.
Yeah, definitely.
Eric, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Good luck to you as well. What about leftovers? Guillermo, let me start with you.
Again, the Latins croquetas. You take that carcasses, all the meat. You simmer it, and you make like sort of soup stock with it, and then you make a bechamel with all that turkey meat. You make croquetas, and you put them in the freezer for the next time, and you can fry them anytime you want. You can have them in a night that you have nothing else to eat or you don't feel like cooking anything. You just fry them and go.
Oh, that sounds good. Do you cook the bones?
Cook everything.
I mean, yeah.
Just put everything in a pot with celery, onions, carrots, water, or chicken stock, and then make a very fortified turkey stock.
How about for you?
I'm a sucker for the turkey sandwich. You know, I almost like the breast meat better in a sandwich than on the day of. But a nice option to do is frittata. You know, if you take all of your just mostly your meat or in some of your vegetables, you mix it with some eggs and then maybe fry up some stuffing. It makes a pretty delicious brunch.
Well, on that note, my thanks to both of you very much for joining us today in Radio Times, getting us in the spirit for cooking for Thanksgiving, and happy Thanksgiving to both of you.
Thank you the same.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Andrew Wood, owner and chef of Russet. He works with his wife, pastry chef Kristen Wood, also co-owner and chef at the restaurant at Wybrook Farm that's in Honeybrook, PA. And Guillermo Pernot, he is a 2-time James Beard Award-winning chef partner at Cuba Libre and Rum Bar. And both of them joining us today on Radio Times to talk about what to cook tomorrow. And we wish you a very happy Thanksgiving from all of us here at WHYY. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of the show, produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Builder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us. And we're going to close things out with another piece of music. And this is an excerpt from Church by Lyle Lovett from his 1992 album.
It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good corn bread. Now listen to what the preacher said. Now let's do the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go. Yes, and I did give a signal. Yes, I raised up my hands. And then joined with me the choir. Every woman, a child and man sang to the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher said. To the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go. The preacher, he stopped preaching.